Efforts for compromise with Rome. Frederick of Saxony carefully concealed his real feelings toward the reformer. At the same time, he guarded him with tireless vigilance, watching his movements and those of his enemies. But many made no attempt to conceal their sympathy with Luther. The doctor's little room, wrote Spalatin, could not contain all the visitors who presented themselves. Even those who had no faith in his doctrines could not but admire that integrity which led him to brave death rather than violate his conscience. Earnest efforts were made to obtain Luther's consent to a compromise with Rome. Nobles and princes represented to him that if he set up his own judgment against the church and the councils, he would be banished from the empire and have no defense. Again he was urged, submit to the judgment of the emperor. Then he would have nothing to fear. I consent, said he in reply, with all my heart, that the emperor, the princes, and even the meanest Christian, should examine and judge my works, but on one condition, that they take the word of God for their standard. Men have nothing to do but to obey it. To another appeal he said, I consent to renounce my safe conduct. I place my person and my life in the emperor's hands, but the word of God, never. He stated his willingness to submit to a general council, but on condition that the council be required to decide according to the scriptures. In what concerns the word of God and the faith, every Christian is as good a judge as the Pope, though supported by a million councils. Both friends and foes were at last convinced that further effort for reconciliation would be useless. Had the reformer yielded a single point, Satan and his hosts would have gained the victory. But his unwavering firmness was the means of emancipating the church. The influence of this one man who dared to think and act for himself was to affect the church in the world, not only in his own time, but in all future generations. Luther was soon commanded by the emperor to return home. This notice would be speedily followed by his condemnation. Threatening clouds overhung his path, but as he departed from Worms, his heart was filled with joy and praise. After his departure, desirous that his firmness not be mistaken for rebellion, Luther wrote to the emperor, I am ready most earnestly to obey your majesty, in honor or in dishonor, in life or in death, and with no exception save the word of God, by which man lives, when eternal interests are concerned, God wills not that man should submit unto man. For such submission in spiritual matters is a real worship, and ought to be rendered solely to the Creator. On the journey from Worms, princely ecclesiastics welcomed the excommunicated monk, and civil rulers honored the man whom the emperor had denounced. He was urged to preach, and, notwithstanding the imperial prohibition, he again entered the pulpit. I never pledged myself to chain up the word of God, he said, nor will I. He had not been long absent from Worms when the papists prevailed upon the emperor to issue an edict against him. Luther was denounced as Satan himself under the form of a man and dressed in a monk's frock. As soon as his safe conduct should expire, all persons were forbidden to harbor him, give him food or drink, or by word or act, aid or abet him. He was to be delivered to the authorities, his adherents also to be imprisoned and their property confiscated. His writings were to be destroyed, and, finally, all who should dare to act contrary to this decree were included in its condemnation. The Elector of Saxony and the princes most friendly to Luther had left Worms soon after his departure, and the emperor's decree received the sanction of the Diet. The Romanists were jubilant. They considered the fate of the Reformation sealed.